Welcome, friends, to another episode of the Paseo Pathway Podcast. He's back. Shelton is back. Our Globetrotter is back. And we are going to be talking about the Great Commission from Matthew chapter 28. We've covered a lot of ground in our Bible reading this past week. We finished Matthew. We're in Leviticus. We've read a few Psalms. And we've read 2 Thessalonians. So lots of ground to cover. We had good options of what we wanted to focus on this week, but we want to talk about Jesus's Great Commission, the last chapter of Matthew's gospel, and learn like the relevance that it has for us in 2026. So Shelton, welcome back. Really glad to see you sitting across the table here.
Man, I'm glad to be back. I tell you, it was really cool to be in Africa and reading through the book of Exodus there. Mm-hmm. First of all, that's the continent that much of that took place on.
Yeah.
Right. Which is just a neat idea that I was there, way far away from Egypt, but still, if that was neat. But to know that my church family was also reading through the same things and to follow along with the podcast, it was very, I don't know, I enjoyed that quite a bit in my quiet times there. But yeah, we've gone through, we've covered a lot already, so I'm excited to continue on. Now we're in the humdrum of Leviticus, so stay strong, get through it. There is still so much rich stuff in Leviticus.
There's really much to
think about the sacredness of the sacrifices and all that's happening there, and that Jesus is our sacrifice. But I'm excited today to have our conversation around the Great Commission. But before we get there, let's chat, because you have lots of experience in reading through the Bible multiple times in your life. And you have an idea that you like to always kind of start with just a little tool or little suggestion of help, and I like your suggestion this week. Why don't you share with everybody what you're thinking?
So this week we're going to be talking about having a reading partner or an accountability partner, and I think this is so important. It's been very helpful in my life over the years. I think of Jesus's words to Peter, which we just read recently in Matthew's gospel, that the spirit is willing, but the flesh is weak. And it's so true. Many of us, we want to read the Bible. It is a high value for us, and yet our flesh is weak, and we can find ourselves missing one day, 2 days, 3 days, and then we're kind of out of the rhythm, we're behind schedule, and we can kind of throw in the towel if we get discouraged. So having an accountability partner that helps us stay consistent has been something that's really helped me. I was sharing with you before we started recording that it's a little bit like having someone that you go to the gym to work out with.
Yeah.
So you've probably experienced that, like just the value of having someone who's going there with you.
Yeah, I need more of that.
Yeah, me too. But I think the way this can work is it doesn't have to be that you're necessarily reading together every day. You don't even have to necessarily be in the same spot in the reading plan. You can be off by a few days. But one way that it's helped me is just to have someone that I can text, hey, this stood out to me today and really encouraged me, and vice versa. It does work to also occasionally, once a week, maybe grab coffee, actually do your readings together.
Yeah, that's cool.
Not necessarily that you have to read out loud together. Maybe you read your portion, they're reading their portion quietly, and then you talk about it. That's something that can really encourage us with consistency.
It's really neat in Africa. Gary and I, you know, we don't have any other responsibilities besides, you know, teaching scripture there. So our mornings don't typically get started till around 9. Mm-hmm. So we get a good extended morning there. And it's one of my favorite things about being there, sitting on the patio, listening to the birds singing and reading scripture. But we'd typically always end our conversation like in that morning, like, hey, what are you reading? You know, and just that little bit, it's always good to process out loud what's going on there. So that's a great tip.
Yes. You know, Carlo and I were talking a few weeks ago about ruminating or meditating. And one of the ways that we meditate is by talking it out, processing verbally. And that's actually biblical. You know, Joshua 1 says, do not let this book of the law depart from your mouth, but meditate on it day and night. So part of how we meditate on scripture is just to talk it out with each other. And that's another benefit. So that's hopefully an encouragement that you guys can try out. If you don't have an accountability partner, ask a friend to be that for you this coming week. And maybe once or twice during the week, just text one another what you're reading, what you're getting out of it.
Yeah.
But let's shift gears. We're going to talk about Matthew 28. And this wasn't planned. It was in our reading plan. And we're not in Matthew 28 on Sundays, but you did reference it because we were talking about the authority of Jesus from Matthew 21. Mm-hmm. And Jesus talks about his authority in Matthew 28. So we're going to see that. But you actually mentioned that there is no such thing as a purposeless Christian. Mm-hmm. So maybe remind us, what do you mean by that?
Man, I'm why would you say that? I'm passionate about this. Because I think this is something that we've missed in Christianity. And I think we have developed this mindset where you have ministers, you have those in ministry, you know, and they're the ones that go make disciples.
Yep.
And then you have those that are observing, right? And that sit and
that's supporting, kinda,
supporting,
like, holding
like
the ropes while the full-timer jumps over the edge of the cliff.
And that is as far away from the biblical picture of what the church is and what the calling is. And I think what that results in is purposeless Christians, in that men and women who love Jesus but don't have any sense of what they're supposed to be doing with their life.
Yeah.
And I get this a lot, where people just are bored in life.
Yeah.
In America, we tend to turn to our careers for our purpose. And we're going to try to find our purpose in our careers, which, that to me sounds like Jesus says, hey, be careful where you store up your treasures, not on earth where moth and rust, will destroy. Like if you find your purpose in something that is going to go away, you are anchoring yourself to a sense of purposelessness and sorrow and frustration. And so it makes total sense that God has given us this eternal purpose that far exceeds your job. I'm glad. I want you to be passionate about your job. Go be a great doctor. Go be a great nurse. Go be a great construction worker. Go be a great teacher. Like, I love that. Mm. And we're called to do everything with excellence, right? Go do that with excellence. But why? Why? Is it for your pride that you know that you did it? No, because it brings glory to God. Mm. And the moment that a Christian embraces, you know what, my purpose is to help others know Jesus Christ and follow him, suddenly every day is endowed with significant meaning. Mm. Every conversation, every task I'm doing at work, like, it completely changes everything. And if I can advocate, I mean, one of the very first sermon series we did here was in the book of Acts. I think it was before you were coming to Paseo.
Yeah.
And we called it Participants.
Yep.
And it was something that we were saying, hey, we have to shift from a spectator to participant mindset. Mm-hmm. There's no such thing as players on the field and people in the stands. Hmm. Like, we're all on the fields of life. And this is the vision. Because you and I are pastors. Okay, great. We're two guys in a town of 300,000 people in Chula Vista and San Diego proper. There's millions. Okay, like, God's vision is not for a handful of pastors to bring His glory and make disciples there. His vision is every Christian embracing this calling on their life, and He has scattered us throughout San Diego, throughout Chula Vista. The only thing that's lacking is that the Christians have not picked up this sense of calling and purpose. And so, to me, man, I can go off on this for a long time. If I can help our church just make this shift, that it doesn't matter who you are, you have a God-given calling and from His authority to go make disciples. And what you ought to be asking is not what is my purpose, but how do I do that? Like, that ought to be your question. How do I fulfill that? How do we get this done? But now, you've given your life to helping others make disciples. And I know this is something you and I bonded over very early on when we met each other. So you're hearing me go off on it from a pastor standpoint. But what's going through your mind right now? Is that?
Well, I have a real heart for this, because I think that a lot of times we just don't know what we don't know. And the culture that we often come up with in the church, the Christian culture that we often come up with, can reinforce that idea that there are qualified leaders who know how to make disciples, and then there are the rest of us who need to just learn. And and support those who are making disciples.
Yeah.
So the system itself oftentimes can reinforce that misunderstanding, but as we're going to see here, that's not the case. Like you said, all of us are players on the field, and the audience, the those who are in the stands are those who have gone before us. That's what Hebrews says. We are surrounded by a great cloud of witnesses, people who are observing and watching this generation, our generation, live for Jesus and serve him. But if you're alive today, then you're called to this purpose and this mission. And I think there's two things that we have to get right as Christians, as people who belong to Jesus, and that is our identity and our purpose. Mm-hmm. And they're both found in Jesus. Mm-hmm. So we don't find those outside of Jesus. Our identity is really anchored in Jesus. So who he is defines who I am, mm-hmm. right? So, and you can just walk down the list. So if Jesus is a teacher, I am a student. Mm-hmm. You know, if Jesus is master, I am a servant. If Jesus is the shepherd, I am a sheep who needs mm-hmm. to be guided and cared mm-hmm. for. And you can just walk it all the way down. So my identity is rooted in my connection to Jesus. He's the one who has made me part of God's family. But then my purpose is also rooted in Jesus, because whatever he's giving his life to, he's inviting me into. So I'm not trying to find my purpose and then live for Jesus. I'm trying to discover the purpose that Jesus already has and join him. That's what we're going to see.
I love it. I'm going to give a quick shout out to one of our brothers in the church, to Tim Palmer.
Yeah.
And when I first got to Paseo, Tim and I would meet quite a bit. And if you know Tim, love Tim. But he's got a health condition that keeps him from working. Hmm. And he, with that, you know, the struggle of a sense of identity and purpose. And just because we are taught as Americans, your work defines you. Right?
Yeah.
And that's so hard. He has, and I remember talking with him early on and saying, and you did too, of, hey, brother, you have a purpose in your life. Go make disciples. And once that shifted over, like, go talk, anybody talk to Tim right now. Yeah. He is lit up with this. This is what he knows his life purpose is. He had never really contemplated that. Yeah. That was always for other people. And so when he just made that shift as, hey, I'm just a regular church guy. What do you mean I'm called to go make disciples? Mm. And once he embraced that, like every day for Tim now has huge meaning and purpose. And he has come alive.
Right.
And I love watching that. And so, sorry, Tim, if you didn't want me to share all that, but I just want to brag on you, because I want to see that shift in all of us, where no matter who you are, you say, man, I got a God-given purpose. And it's rooted right here in Matthew 28.
Yeah.
And so Jesus is at the very end. He's resurrected. He's with his disciples, and he tells them, this is famously starting in verse 18 of Matthew 28, all authority has been given to me in heaven and earth. Mm. Like, he's saying, I'm master over everything.
Yeah.
Because of that, go and make disciples of all nations. He's looking at his disciples and says, you belong to me.
Mm-hmm.
I've been made Lord over everything.
Right.
Therefore, because of that, because you belong to me and I'm Lord, go make disciples. Go help others come to know this. It's an awesome thing. There is a sense of wanting to know what does this look like. I like, you talked about how there's three commands in this, right?
Yeah. 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 So Jesus says, make disciples. Therefore, go and make disciples, baptizing them in the name of the Father and the Son and the Holy Spirit, teaching them to observe. So you have three imperatives there. You've got make disciples, baptize them, teach them. But really, if you follow the setup of the Greek there, there's really one imperative, and that is make disciples. So that is the primary imperative that Jesus is calling them to. And then the baptizing them and teaching them, that gets into how you're going to do this. How are you going to make disciples? Well, it will involve baptizing. It will involve teaching them to obey. But, you know, if we back up just a little bit, even from there, how amazing was this for the 11? This is their first time in Matthew's gospel seeing the resurrected Jesus. Mm-hmm. So they travel to Galilee, they go to this mountain that they've been directed to, and there Jesus is. Mm-hmm. So they see Jesus, who They had just, the last time they saw him, he was dead on the cross. Mm-hmm. And so they see a resurrected Jesus, which had to be mind-blowing just right from the get-go. And then Jesus, the very first thing he says is, all authority has been given to me in heaven and on earth. So there's no place in all creation where I do not rule supreme. Therefore.
Yeah. So and that has weight to it because he's just risen from the dead.
They're so they're clearly their minds are blown. Yep. Like he's alive and he's telling them, I have supreme authority. So whatever comes after that, if you see someone who has overcome death, and we talked about this a little bit off camera, Hebrews 7 says that Jesus has been given the power of an indestructible life. And I often refer to this as resurrection 2.0. He has humanity 2.0. Jesus is the prototype. He's the only one who has experienced, he's the only person, human, who has experienced this resurrection body. Mm. So there are people who have been brought back to life. Lazarus, Jesus famously brought him back to life, but eventually death got him.
He still had the same old body.
He had the same old body. It was just restored.
Yeah.
Jesus is not just resurrected. He is resurrected with a body that is indestructible. Mm-hmm. And that's what all of us are looking forward to. Mm-hmm. We're going to be resurrected. So they see Jesus, upgraded Jesus, which I don't even know if that's the right way to, it's theologically appropriate.
Might be wrong, but
from a human point of view, his humanity is upgraded. He's indestructible. He has an indestructible life. And he's been given all authority in heaven and on earth. And now he invites them into this. So up until now, it's all about Jesus. And now he's calling them into a life that he has for them.
Man, and think about this. Like, okay, at my house.
Yeah.
If I look my kids in the face and I'm dad and I tell them, go do something.
Yeah.
Like, that has weight to it. I just told you to go do something. Go clean your room.
Yeah.
Go do this thing. Their choice then, because I'm the one with the authority, is either obedience or disobedience.
Right.
That's the only two, because I'm the one that has the authority. Yep. And so I've told them to do this thing. It wasn't an option.
Right.
So they have to decide what they're doing with this command, because I have the authority. Mm. And I'm going to respond to them based off of how they respond to that command.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
Like if you go do what I've told you to do,
right,
that's going to result in something. If you don't do what I've told you to do, that's going to result in something. You know, this is rooted in, we've got to talk about this because of Matthew 21, where his authority comes. And the very next parable, we're going to study this in church on Sunday, is the parable of the two sons.
Yep.
Where one of them is disobedient, one of them is obedient. And this is immediately what Jesus wants our mind to be on. Mm-hmm. And what I want all of us to feel the weight of is the weight of, just like if you're a parent, you know that feeling. You've told your kid to do something. It's now in their court. Are they going to obey you or not? Mm. We need to feel that weight that Jesus has clearly told his disciples. I have all authority. Here is your command. You're either obedient to that or you're not. Those are the only two options.
Right.
Right. And so once that shifts in our mindset, then the sense of urgency ought to be rising up in us of going, oh my goodness, okay, yeah, I gotta do this. He's told me to do this.
Yes.
And not only that, he points to, I'm gonna be with you helping you get this accomplished, but there is a time, an end of the age.
Right.
Where there's a deadline coming,
yeah. Right,
where you're not going to have the opportunity to do this anymore.
Yeah,
and we'll get into this in Matthew 21. The rest of his parables are all about.
Yeah, they really are.
Are you going to be doing what you're supposed to be doing?
Yes.
When I return.
Right.
So the rest of Matthew is built off of this authority, and are you doing what you've been commanded to do? Hmm. And so I want us to feel the weight of the resurrected, authoritative Jesus giving us this command. And so he says, go make disciples. And we used your definition. I love this definition, that being a disciple is living a life devoted to Jesus. And that's where it starts. That's where it starts. Before we ever start the making disciples, we need to understand what it means to be a disciple.
Yeah.
And you kind of root this in the calling, right?
Yeah. So I sometimes talk about the two 19s of Matthew. So Matthew 4:19, very famous. At the outset of his time, it's actually the first words of Jesus in Matthew's gospel to the disciples. He says, come follow me.
So before he says go, he says come.
Yep, so come follow me is where we start in Matthew 4. Now we're 3 years later, Matthew 28, he says, go make disciples. And so I love this idea of come follow me, go make disciples, that these are really central to what Jesus is calling us to.
Yeah.
He's calling us to be a disciple, come follow me.
Yeah.
But he's also calling us to learn and become disciple makers, go make disciples.
And those two things are not separate.
They're not separate. But there is, you can't make a disciple. You know, you can't get to Matthew 28 if
you don't start with Matthew 4.
So they're connected,
But I think a lot of us just try to stay at Matthew 4.
Yeah, you can't do it.
That's not the whole story. Right. The whole thing is,
you get in trouble if you stay in Matthew 4, because then you're the son that
doesn't do what
that
he's
says
to
yes,
do.
Father, but yes, does not go
that's
out
exactly
into the field.
Right. That's exactly right.
So we have to respond. And that's another thing that happens here. So sometimes people listening to this today, it may be a new thought. I know for me, it was a new thought. I grew up in church. I never had the idea that I was supposed to make a disciple because I was just a regular person. I didn't know the Bible very well. So surely God wouldn't. Yes, he calls some people to make disciples, but not me. So it could be that this is a new idea that I'm supposed to make a disciple. And that should be challenging. Mm. But that's why Jesus says he's with us. Mm-hmm. He's with us always. It was challenging to these first followers. But he's with us. And as long as we're following him and growing, like we say, to be a disciple is to live a life of devotion. To make a disciple is to help others live a life of devotion.
And I love that definition because he's also talking to them as a group.
Yeah, yeah.
He didn't just get Peter and say, he's talking to them as a group.
Yeah.
And we belong together as a church in this family, and it's our efforts together to make a disciple. Like, mm-hmm. You don't have to be an expert. So your part might be inviting folks in on this and, hey, come to my growth group. Come grab a meal with us. Come to church, sit with
me.
Like you don't have to be the full expert, but you see your total purpose of I'm helping others grow in their devotion mm-hmm. to Jesus. And so we're doing this together as a church, that we've all feel this weight of a calling on our life. And there's a sense of some of us might be better at it than others. Mm-hmm. And Jesus will get to the parable of talents here coming. Okay, what did you do with what you got?
Right.
But you're called to do something.
Yeah.
Right? And so get out and go make disciples. And it is just a total shift of mindset to say for somebody to be like, okay, I've only ever sat in church and just received. I've never actually thought about how I'm called to go and do.
Right.
I get the come and follow. I've never really weighed the go and do.
And that's where we're going. That's why I loved that this is how Matthew ends his gospel.
Yeah.
I will sometimes jokingly say, you know, read verse 21. Well, there is no verse 21. This is it. So Jesus, this is where Matthew said, yep, that's where the story ends with Jesus and his disciples. In fact, the very last thing he says is to the end of the age.
Yeah.
So these are what we would call standing orders. Go therefore and make disciples to the end of the age. And that's why it has relevance for us in 2026.
That's why we know he wasn't just talking to the 11.
Absolutely. And he also tells them, teach them to obey everything that I've commanded you. And that's part of it.
This is part of that.
Commanding you to make disciples. Part of what they were called to, and they did. That's why the gospel did not end in the first century, because the next generation passed it on
They feel the weight of it.
Yeah.
And this is huge.
Yeah.
This is huge. It ought to be why the church exists. This is the purpose of the church.
Right.
So even in why do I give part of my income to the church?
Right.
It's for the purpose of the Great Commission. Why do I help send missionaries? It's part of the Great Commission. Mm-hmm. Like how I see everything that I do in life ought to be built out of God told me to do this until the end of the age. I got to be a part of this. And that's true of every believer. And if we all feel the weight of that, like why are we helping plant a new church here in Chula Vista? The Great Commission. why are we going to do more after that? The Great Commission. Like this is our driver of what we're doing.
I'm a simple man. So I sometimes love the idea. We talk about church being family.
Yeah.
Well, this is the family business.
I like that.
So like if God's brought you into his family, just be aware there is a family business that you're also called to become a part of and to learn and to help out with. And that is this mission of sharing him, making disciples. And that's why we do foreign missions, local missions, personal disciple making.
Yes. And there's a sense that I can just see somebody saying, but who am I to go do that?
Yeah, where do you start? Yeah.
And well, but there's a that's the point.
Yeah, yeah.
Like they looked at Peter and go, who are these uneducated fishermen? Right. But they noted, but they've been with Jesus.
Yeah.
Like that's Acts. Like that's like they're yeah. before the Sanhedrin. They're like,
so oh, true.
They've been with Jesus. Okay. So who are you? You've been with Jesus. You're a follower of Jesus. That's who you are. And there's this, I think Satan can tempt us to hold back because we think we're not worthy of such a calling. The moment yeah. you say, yes, I am, I belong to Jesus. So all of a sudden your life as you wake up every morning is endowed with eternal meaning and purpose. That can change the way you're living your life. Mm-hmm. It's one of the great ways that the old is gone and the new has come.
Right.
Man, I've got meaning and stuff I've got to do. Like,
And I want folks to understand everything that we're trying to do as a church here at Paseo, it's all feeding into this mission.
Right. Ephesians says he gives some to be pastors, teachers to equip the saints for ministry.
Yeah.
And so that's what we're doing. Like even right now, like this is
the reason we do this podcast. Yeah. Yeah. The reason we're doing the reading plan, that's a come and follow. Like this is a chance for us to make time to sit at the feet of Jesus, to read and to listen and to reflect, to share with one another. The reason we do growth groups, we've got a resource called the Core Four that we're beginning to share and build out here at Paseo. Folks will be hearing more about it in the summer and beyond.
Yeah. Yeah.
But the whole point of this is to follow Jesus more faithfully and to learn how to help others follow him. That's it. That is the only mission we have as a church, for us to follow Jesus, for us to help others follow him. That's it.
That's it.
So we can keep it simple.
I'm excited about the Core Four. If you don't know what that is, you'll see it come out. You've put together a really neat resource and you're training some folks on it, but it's not rocket science in and of itself. Nope. Four things to know, four things to grow.
Yeah.
I like it. And so be looking for that tool to come out. Hey, if you're walking away with anything from this conversation, I want you to walk away with a very clear understanding that this is the calling on your life, is to go make disciples. So may you that both startle you and excite you at the same time. May you feel the urgency of that. Yeah. We need to feel the urgency of that. Such good stuff. I could sit and camp on this for
I could
a
too.
Long
yes.
time. It's so good. We did get a couple of questions in this week that are kind of cool questions. And it's worth wrestling with. One comes out of Exodus.
Yeah.
All right. So our sister Evelyn wrote in and she wants to know, because it seems kind of confusing.
Yeah, let me read this one. This is Evelyn Elogan asks, how should we understand Exodus 33, where God speaks with Moses face to face? Yet later, same chapter, God tells Moses that no one can see his face and live. And so the specific verse is Exodus 33:11. It says, the Lord would speak with Moses face to face, just as a man speaks with his friend. But then just a few verses later in verse 20, the Lord added, you cannot see my face, for humans cannot see me and live. So you can see why there would be a question of what's going on here.
Sure. There's a sense with, and you could build on this, but it's quite possible to talk somebody face to face. And still, we all went through COVID.
Yeah,
where I'm looking at you face to face, but you still can't see the fullness of my face. And so those two things are not separated. Mm-hmm. The significance there is so he could see Moses. He allowed Moses to come before him because he loves Moses. He shields his mm-hmm. glory and its fullness from Moses. Right. But the significance there is that Moses had a unique relationship with God that nobody else had. And now it wasn't so unique that he got to see this glory because he would die. Now he did get to see the backside of God. Nobody else got to see the fullness. But God still came before him in a very real way. Even if he kind of veiled himself a little bit, he still was before him face to face. And so there's this great passage in Numbers that you brought up. Numbers 12, 7 and 8 says, listen to what I say. If there is a prophet among you from the Lord, I make myself known to him in a vision, and I speak with him in a dream, but not so with my servant Moses. He is faithful in all my household, and I speak with him directly, openly, and not in riddles. He sees the form of the Lord, the form of Yahweh. So he gets to see the form. So not the fullness of Yahweh, but nobody else gets to see the form. He is right. unique in that. So why were you not afraid to speak against my servant Moses? So this is what made Moses unique. So I think it, to me, there's that form and fullness.
I love that. I love that analogy of, you know, having the mask. We're still face to face, but you're not seeing the full representation. I think this is a figure of speech, basically face to face. It does fit in with this idea that the Lord speaking with Moses is was conversational. And you see that, like they're going back and forth where Moses is pleading for God's wrath to turn away from the people. And then God changes his mind. He repents. And so there's this dialogue that's happening. Whereas what the Lord is saying there in Numbers is, yes, I speak to other prophets, but it's through visions, it's through dreams.
Yeah, riddles almost. Yeah.
Riddles. Not so with Moses. Yeah. He and I are just chopping it up on the top of the mountain. Yeah. So I think that's the primary meaning, the unique
face-to-face,
intimate connection that Moses had with the Lord. So great question, Evelyn. Do you want to try to take this other one? We're right at our time.
I think we should because I think it's a great question.
So this was from Sandy Valdez, and she has been, Sandy, you've done a great job asking questions. I appreciate it. If you've made it this far into the podcast, send in questions. Like we actually do want this to be something that we can go back and forth as a church family. But Sandy asks, was Pilate's wife's dream from God or Satan? And she's referencing a verse out of Matthew's gospel, Matthew 27, and it's talking about Pilate, the governor, the Roman governor. It says, while he was sitting on the judge's bench, his wife sent word to him saying, have nothing to do with that righteous man, for today I've suffered terribly in a dream because of him. So Sandy's asking, this dream that Pilate's wife got about Jesus, like in the moment as he's on trial, the question is this dream coming from the enemy who perhaps is trying to prevent this crucifixion, or is it from God? Mm. Okay, I'll turn it over to the expert here.
Yeah, it's easy answer. We don't know.
Yes.
It's a quick, easy answer. We don't know. That's something in silence there, and we're not told. It could just be her own conscience. It could just be her watching this sweet guy come up and she's her own conscience, but we don't know. But I like the way you kind of put this in our conversation beforehand of we're not supposed to know.
Yeah, basically, you know, the Bible, sometimes we can have this idea that the Bible, if you're smart enough and you look hard enough, the Bible has an answer to every question. And it's not so. The Bible never tries to answer all of our questions. The Bible answers all the questions that God knows that we need and that he wants us to have. And that's it. So sometimes we can try to get more out of the Bible than God is offering.
Sure, sure.
And I'm not saying it's wrong to ask these questions.
No, it's a good question.
It's a great question.
Yeah, yeah.
But sometimes we have to be satisfied with, I'm not sure.
Yeah.
It's an interesting question. Like maybe, could it have been from the enemy trying to prevent? We don't know.
Could be.
We don't know. But it's fascinating that it happened.
Yeah.
It's another indicator that there were plenty of opportunities for Pilate to realize that this man was innocent.
Yeah.
Both from the evidence, his own wife is giving him, you know, advice.
Yeah.
So.
Good stuff. And don't stop asking questions. Yeah. I think that's part of when we do our pathways training. It's one of the things that we say. It's our second step. Ask good questions. Yes. And so as you go through, it's worth. But also, not every question are you going to find an answer to, and that's okay.
Yeah.
Hey, church family, we've gone long on this one, but probably because this is a topic that you and I are super passionate about. Yeah. It's something that I hope marks us as a church, that everybody who follows Jesus and has been born again into him realizes they've been born again into a mission and a purpose in life, and that is to bring him glory by helping others come to know him as well. And we call that disciple making. And so continue to ask questions of how you can grow in that. We're praying for you. We love you. We'll see you next time.